what is the NFL draft and why it's important. It's become so, like, you know, marketed nowadays that I think everybody knows what it is, but the draft is basically like a big job fair. I mean, you have close to 300, if not more than 300 guys that are invited to the camps, and this is all based on your body of work that you've done over your 3 years in college, 4 years in college, whatever it may be. You know, they'll look at you and they'll say, hey, we like you, we want you to come out, and we want to see you further. We want to do some different interviews. I mean, they have different stations that you have to hit while you're there. You do the 40, you do bench press, you do different athletic tests, you do medical evaluations. So if you've ever had an injury, they're going to poke and pry. They're going to bring their guys in, their doctors, and they're going to make sure that everything is okay, because, you know, this is an opportunity for them to look you over, see what you're all about. You're going to have face-to-face interviews with these coaches, and it's just like I said, it's a big job fair, and they're going to question you, you know, if you had any little thing that happened, like, what about this? Can you go into detail about this? How did this happen? You had an ankle injury. How did that affect you? How do you feel now? And then they're going to have their people doing that. Then they have what's called a Wordelic test, and that basically is just to judge or to evaluate your football IQ. And so it's taking the, you take the test, and then they'll go through and they'll have their people grade you, and they'll evaluate, like, okay, his football IQ is here, here, or here. And you have drug tests. So that's why sometimes at the combines, you always hear guys, they go in there and they're doing great, but then all of a sudden they get pop positive for, you know, whatever.
At the combine that happens?
Yeah, they'll have, you have to take a drug test while you're there, and you may not know what your result, I mean, you know what your results are if you've been doing something, right?
You know.
But you about find out after the combines are over. I know when I played and I went to the combines out of college, it was like a two-day event. And it was just nonstop, go, 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 go. Now they've broken it up to where it's about a four-day event, and they've made this huge social spectacle about it where people can tune in and they can watch the 40. Yeah. They can watch the different drills and watch their favorite players compete.
It's super different now. Yeah.
And
what year was it when you were in the combine?
1999.
99, the year of the Matrix. I've said this before. Big year.
You like that.
It's year of the Matrix, baby. I remember back in the 90s, I mean, as a football watcher, as a kid in the 90s, I didn't know anything about the combine. Right. You know, I barely knew anything about draft day. And I think that was a big day and people knew about it. But the combine was something that I don't think anybody was really interested in.
No.
I mean, you were interested in the college players, and then you were interested if they got drafted. But the combine was something that didn't go on TV.
No.
And now you kind of see an entire
everything.
Yeah, it's all about it. Yeah. They got branding and everything.
Yeah, they had branding, everything. I mean, I remember when I went there, it was – you know, you go up on the stage, you're standing in this long line of guys, and you're just going up on stage, and they have you stand there, and they measure your arm.
It's a meat
market. It's a meat market, yeah, and they measure your hand width, and they measure your wingspan, and then, you know, you're standing there, you're trying to get every inch you can, because now you're trying to do everything you can to get that extra little bump to go from second round to the bottom of the first round, or bottom of the first round to the middle of the first round. So you're standing up tall, and they're going to push you down, make you shorter, because you're trying to increase your value, they're trying to decrease your value. And it's just going back and forth, and you get in front of these coaches, and there's these constant interviews. You know, I remember one of the coaches asked me, he goes, so I see, you know, you and your girlfriend have been together for about a year, year and a half now.
They get that deep.
Oh, God, if they're going to pay you that kind of money, they have people, they have private investigators that will go in and they'll watch guys, they'll monitor them. They have people on campus that'll be like, hey, you know, this guy likes to party a little bit much, or this guy's into some things that, you know, we need to be careful about. There's too many red flags about him. Like, they're going to invest a lot of money in you, so they want to know that they have a safe investment, that their money, they're going to get their return on their money. And I think more young men need to understand that when they go into this, that even before you ever get to this combine, if you're somebody that teams are considering drafting, they know about you. I mean, he asked me about my girlfriend, and I was like, wow. Like,
and you weren't prepared for that conversation.
No, absolutely not. I had no idea that that was going to happen. I mean,
that's changed a lot now. Like, these guys now, it's bigger. It was big business when you were doing it. It's bigger business now.
Absolutely.
So now there's probably even more preparation
going
into it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But still, that Do you feel like every player is like prepared for very deeply personal questions when they come there to do bench press and 40-yard dashes?
Yeah, absolutely. They're ready for it now, because now you have your agents, and that's your agent's job, is to prepare you for that. I mean, when my agent was going – well, when I went through it with my agent, you know, you know about the test that you're going to take as far as drug tests. You're going to take the IQ test. You're going to take your bench press, all the physical stuff and the meetings that you're going to have. But I don't think that most players are ready for – the in-depth questions that you're going to get. I mean, I think things have changed a lot now to where that's not a surprise anymore. But I remember that was something that kind of caught me off guard. Like, and I'm like, well, yeah, we're still together. Like, how is that any of your business? But that's just another thing for them to see. Like, are women going to be your problem? Is it drugs? Is it alcohol? Like, they have people, and I mean, I can't say that I know this for a fact, but if you're investing $30, $40, $50 million into a guy, you're going to have people on campus that are out at the clubs with him, that are watching them, that are keeping their eye on him, like little spies that are just like, okay, you know, Russell likes to have a little fun. He's not crazy. He's not outrageous. You know, he's a safe bet for us to draft at, you know, a high position like that. So
now, you said that sometimes they'll even get PIs, private investigators,
to look into
your life. Is there a big consequence to lying and then they find out later? Like, say, for instance, you said, I have a girlfriend, and then they find out you don't have a girlfriend. What would that mean?
I don't think that's a big deal, but I mean, they're going to ask you about a lot of things, and 9 times out of 10, when they're asking you these questions, they already know the answer.
Okay.
And so it's best just to be upfront about things. If there's a problem, if there's a situation, if you know there's something you're hiding, and then you're sitting there like me and you're talking and we're being interviewed, and you ask me a direct question about something in my past, that's not by chance. I mean, obviously you've done your homework.
That's true.
So at that point, it's in my best interest to go ahead and fess up and say, you know what, this happened during this time, and you know, I regret that it happened, but since then I've moved on, I'm a better person for it. But when you sit there and you're like, no, I've never got a DUI.
Right.
I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, well, you know, right here it says that you got this and you were taken downtown. Now, you may have gotten out of it. People pull some strings for you. But, you know, is that a problem for you?
And it's going to be an ongoing problem if you're being asked here at the Combine. So you already know as a player, this is going to be an issue I have to manage probably throughout my career until they believe that I'm not this person that they're fearing.
Absolutely. And even still, it comes down to dollars and cents, because if they can find, well, you know, you got this DUI, they're going to try to dangle that over your head to be like, well, you know, we don't know. We're not sure if that's the route that we want to go. And you're like, well, come on, man, I made a mistake. And you want to learn from that. You want to move on. But once again, they know what they want. They've seen you. They've studied you. Now this is just a tactic of, can we get him for cheaper? Can we kind of box him into a corner to make him feel like, you know, I'll just take what you can give me. I just want an opportunity to prove myself.
Now, at the Combine, are these, like, all NFL teams there, or is this some sort of separate agency that manages the Combine, and then the teams who watch the Combine and see the players, then they make their decisions based on the outcomes there?
No. These are all GMs. These are all scouts, coaches. You know, it's all their people. They're not going to leave their future up to some outside party to come in and say, oh, we watched Omar, and this is our evaluation of him. These are going to be the people that are going to be working with you, that are going to see you day in and day out. So they're going to really learn you, and they want to know everything about you. They want to know your injuries. They want to know what makes you tick. I mean, they want to know how you work. They're going to push you in these drills because they want to try to make you uncomfortable. How do you act in certain situations? You know, if you're doing a bench press and you start getting tired and I'm yelling, let's go, push, are you going to keep going? Are you easily motivated? Are you self-motivated? Do you need somebody to do it for you? So all this stuff goes on. And so you can imagine during a time where it was a 2-day period versus now it's like 4 days. It's not as intense because you have breaks in there. Where it was us, you get there 8 o'clock in the morning and you could be there all day, and you're meeting and you're lifting and you're training. Or I say training, but you do like a Cybex, which is basically a machine. It's like a leg extension machine, and it just measures the strength in your legs. And if you've had an injury, they want to see, compared to a healthy person at your position, you had an ACL tear, so we want to see where you are after all your rehab. So they have you on this machine. Go, go, go. Right. And then it also, it'll flip, and it can use for a shoulder if you've ever had a shoulder injury. So these are all the tests that they're going to put you through while you're there.
And there's like a – sometimes when I see the combine now, it kind of feels like the Olympics a little bit in the way that you have like – you have all these different tests that are happening – but there's clearly ones people are looking forward to a little bit more,
yeah.
Right?
40.
Like with the 40, yeah. the bench press,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
is a big one. I think mm-hmm. I watched a video. Someone showed a video of a defensive player that put up like 26 reps, and it was like people were just like losing their minds, yeah. right? There's definitely like things that people mm-hmm. look forward to more than others.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
If you were to take a guess, what do you think is the most popular combine event and what is the least popular one from a public perception
a public
and also from a player
from the public perspective? Obviously the 40 yard dash, because mm-hmm. you want to see how fast these guys are. It's amazing to see somebody 6'5 260 pounds run a 4.5. The bench press is always going to be another exciting one because you're measuring somebody's strength. I think any of the drills where you're watching the wide receivers, I think that's always going to pull people in. That's yeah. excitement, because you're also getting a preview of what your fantasy team could look like.
Field.
Yeah, who you're going
like,
to see on the field, right?
You so see you a catcher, like, I want to see that in the
like,
game.
Yeah, I want to make sure. Oh, like, wow, we're thinking about getting him. He looked good. I think the ones that aren't as exciting to the fans, but for me, they're very exciting, is watching the defensive linemen go through the different drills, the pass rush drills, how they maneuver in the bags, because to me, that's my life. That's what I've always done. My son does it. So I'm critiquing these guys, and I'm like, wow, he's got good hip flips. You know, he's able to bend. He's contorting his body well. He has good hands, quick feet.
Interesting. So, I didn't even know that was in the combine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, everybody.
Because from what I see in the combine, all I see is the 40, the bench press, the sprints, the catch.
Yeah,
I didn't even. This is how dumb I am. I didn't even realize defensive players were there practicing swim moves and mm-hmm. rushes.
All their stuff.
Oh my goodness! Of course they're there.
I'll give you one even better than that. Kickers. They have kickers there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, they'll start out at 10 yards, you know, extra point. They'll put you at a 50.
Oh,
they'll put you
wow.
at a 45, 43, and they'll put you on the right hash, left hash, in the middle. And they
right.
just want to see how you
Absolutely.
Kick. They want to see your mechanics. So, there. I mean, everything that you can think of that you see on Sundays or on Saturdays, when college or the professional level, they do it all there. They
everything.
Want to see
Special
all that.
Special teams, punt Special returns. Team.
Well, yeah, they do punt returns. They
really?
Want to see guys returning it. For offensive linemen, I probably would say offensive linemen next to the kickers might be, for me, the most boring to watch because you just have these big guys coming off and just driving bags. And they do their agility drills. They pull to show their quickness. You know, they, you know, I would love to know, and I feel bad not even knowing this, but I don't think it just because the possibility of injuries is that you have one-on-ones where offensive
right.
linemen go against defensive linemen. I would love to see that, but the risk of injury
yeah.
would be too high. So I think it's more about going over the bags and your lateral quickness. And, you know, you have, like, different cone drills that measures how fast can you go in one direction and then stop and change direction. So you have, like, a three-cone drill. You have a 60-yard shuttle, which is kind of like a suicide on the basketball court. So you start at the back of the end zone. You go 5, back, 10. And
oh,
you know,
I remember
they
remember those from
yeah,
practice, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, you just unlocked the memories that I want to never come back, man.
Yeah.
I remember being on that field doing that 5. As soon as you hit the 10, when you're like, oh my goodness, I got to do this 3 more times,
yeah,
and
yeah.
it's going to be longer.
And it's checking your endurance, like,
yeah.
you know, are you in good shape? Are you ready? But I think for me, and I would dare say for most guys, the hardest part is when you're sitting in front of those coaches, you're sitting in front of those GMs. And they're just asking you these questions, you know, what about this? And,
the psychological
part. The psychological part.
It's got to be way worse than the physical.
And yeah, oh, by far, because you're sitting here and you're just, and all you see is guys in the background. And they
you don't even know what they're writing down.
You don't know what they're writing down. You don't know what, they could be looking at their son's soccer game, but
Man.
You're just sitting there across from them like, what is he doing? What
right.
is he writing down? Am I answering everything correctly?
Right.
You know, well, I'm supposed to be a first round. And for me, I have a funny story that kind of – it stuck with me for a long time. It took me a while to get over this. Demetrius Underwood was a player that got drafted by the Minnesota Vikings. I think he was 29th overall. Demetrius and I went to the same high school out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, E.E. Smith Senior High School. And I remember I was a year ahead of him, and I took a visit to Michigan State because I love to brag to my son that Nick Saban, when he was at Michigan State, recruited me. So I'm like, yeah, Nick Saban recruited me. You know, but this was before he was Nick Saban in Alabama, but I still like to throw that out there.
Some people will say Nick Saban's always been Nick Saban.
Yeah, he always, he has been. But when he got to Alabama, I think that's when he became like superhuman. But it's when I was there, one of the main reasons I didn't go because it was just the weather. Right. Like I was
Michigan's not fun.
Yeah, I'm from the South. I'm a country boy. That weather was just too much.
Absolutely not.
And so the following year, once I had committed to Chapel Hill, Demetrius Underwood was coming out, you know, prototype, 6'6", long, athletic, everything you're looking for. So he went to Michigan State, and I remember just us being from the same high schools, we kind of stayed in touch, checked up on each other just from, oh, okay, he's doing good.
Played the same position?
Yeah, played the same position. Okay. And I remember he was a year behind me, and he came out early. And I remember he got drafted in front of me, and I was sitting at home or at my apartment when I was in college, and I had my close relatives around, my mom, couple uncles, couple close friends. So it was about 10 to 12 people in the house.
And you guys were expecting a really high draft pick for you.
Yeah, yeah. I had with my agent, and after going to the combine, and he said, hey, this, you're probably going to be a second round pick, you know, pretty high second round, which ended up being the 49th, which is like the 9th pick in the second round. So it was fairly high.
So it's 1999. The Matrix is just released.
You love the Matrix.
You're with the family. You're like, I'm actually the one.
Yeah.
I hope I go number one.
I would have loved that. I just remember sitting there. And it wasn't stressful. It was just fun because I knew I wasn't going to be in the first round. So there was no stress. The first round came.
And what told you that? How did you guys know, like, hey, these are the guys. They're definitely going to go for first. You should set your expectations here. Second round, third round, whatever that may look like. What was that conversation? Was the family aware of that?
No, did you let everybody know that?
I
talked to my close family members, my mother, my high school coach was there. But I didn't involve everybody because they made it more nerve-wracking than it needed to be. My mom knew.
So they're sitting in the room like, he could go number one.
He could go number one. It's like, why didn't you do this?
You're just sitting quiet like it's not going to happen.
Like, just everybody just chill out. It's okay, right?
Go get some chips.
Yeah, just chill. So I'm sitting here and you know, like, well, to answer your question, once you go to the combine, it's an evaluation. They see you. Coming into the combine, they kind of already have a grade set for you.
Okay.
So, you know, Russell Davis, B+. And I'm just using that as an example. I don't even know if that's how they do it, but they'll say a B+. So a B+ is somebody who maybe sneaks into the bottom of the first round, but more than likely you'll probably be within that top 10 or top 15 of the second round. So after going through the evaluations, going through the combines, running, doing all the tests, meeting with all the coaches, you know, your agent kind of gets a grade sheet on you. And, you know, and depending on your agent and how in touch he is with everybody and connections that he has, he can talk to some people and they'll be like, hey, so-and-so, your guy did real good. You know, this is where we see him falling. So once you get that information, it does make it a little easier on you. And I just remember watching the first round. I got my family there and we're, you know, just having a good time and everybody's there and they're just so excited for me. And I remember when the 29th pick came up in the first round, I wasn't thinking anything of it. And I heard Demetrius Underwood. And I was kind of like, what the hell? Because I just remember he was hurt like his junior year. And I'm like, well, you know, now I'm starting to be a hater, basically.
I'm being a hater.
Yeah, you saw I was trying to look for a better word. I was being a hater. Yes, I was. Because I was like, he's not better than me. How did he get in the...
Of course you feel like that, especially draft day.
Yeah, especially
draft
day.
You're like, I'm the biggest, you know, I'm the biggest bull on the block.
Yeah.
I'm the one that should go. So, of course, you're feeling that naturally. And then to do it in your position as well,
yeah,
you got to definitely be feeling like I was the better option.
But, you know, it's funny because just to kind of give you – Booger McFarlane, who's big.
He was now
in my draft, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he went to Tampa Bay. Jadeveon Clowney, who they call the freak. he was in the draft. So I knew there were bigger dogs than me.
Yeah,
but when it got to this one, that kind of just, it stuck me different because I'm like, he was hurt. He really didn't have a, I was evaluating him like I'm a GM. And I remember getting a phone call from one of my coaches, and it was funny because he was at Buffalo Wild Wings. And he called me, and I'm like, hello? And he's like, you okay? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, I just saw. I was like, yeah, man, I'm good, you know, whatever.
Oh, so he knew the beef.
He's like, it wasn't a beef. It wasn't a beef. It wasn't a beef.
I know you got a problem with this boy.
And I was just like, no, I'm fine, man. You know, but deep down I was like, damn, how did he go above me? And it was just like, after that, I was just kind of like, I felt some kind of way. And then I remember around 46, I get a phone call. And it was the Chicago Bears. And I'm talking to Dick Geron on the phone, and everybody in the background is like, oh my God, he's on the phone. Oh my God. And they're talking to me, and he's, and I look back on it now, but I think it was a tactic. I'm going to get you on the phone now. We have the 48th pick, but I'm going to call you at 46 or 45 to tie up your line because you're already talking to me. And nobody tried to call me, but looking back on it now with a little bit of adult knowledge, I'm like, wow, that's, it's a hell of a tactic.
There's a lot of like little tactics like that to like block other teams or get a. That's very interesting. And I watched that movie Draft Day with what is the dude from Waterworld? Kevin Costner.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had a lot of that kind of elements in the movie, and I thought to myself, this is the very Hollywood version of this. But would you say that's similar? Like teams,
you know, I've never
like
seen that?
That
movie, but it's they're not too far-fetched with what they talk about in those movies. It's grounded in a lot of reality.
Okay.
I mean, so when I got that call, I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking on the phone. And all I could hear was everybody in the background. It started like, oh my God, Russell, your phone's ringing. Hello, how you doing? Hey, this is Coach Dick Geron. And you could tell by my face. And everybody's like, oh my God. And everybody's grabbing on me, my little cousins. And I'm kind of like, hey, you know, just chill out. And they're like, look, we have the 48th pick. You know, we're going to take you. You know, I was like, oh my God, I was getting excited now.
Right, right.
And I actually, from being from such a small town, Fayetteville, North Carolina, I had like the local reporter had actually come to my apartment in Chapel Hill, and he was there. And I remember being outside because I just couldn't hear. And I was like, I'm so sorry, coach. He goes, no, I'm used to it. No big deal. I go outside and it's just me and my mom out there, and I can hear everybody else in there. And he was like, they're at 47. 48, we're going to take you. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much.
You don't even know to like, just up to the pick, you don't even know.
Yeah.
You're just sitting in the unknown for that whole first round.
Yeah.
So you could have went first round. You just had no idea. Have some idea?
I had
I'm not going to go this high.
Yeah. I knew I wasn't going to be first round.
Okay.
You know, you go to the combines and you give it all you got and you work out. And, you know, your body of work, they've already evaluated it.
And you don't see that evaluation all the way up to draft day. You actually have no idea what they even said about you through the combine ever.
And I don't think I would want to.
Okay.
Because it can be kind of brutal, man. Like you could, you know, I remember when I was at the Senior Bowl and the coaches for Tampa Bay, Tony Dungy was there. He was our head coach, which was just such an amazing honor. And I remember one day after practice, we're going through some drills and we're going team. So we're going defense against offense and we're going at it. And the ball gets thrown downfield. So I turn and sprint. You know, I kind of pull up. All of a sudden, I hear the D-line coach, Davis, if this was the NFL right now, I would have cut your ass. You don't loaf. I had to catch myself there. You don't loaf. He goes, if this was for real. Not for real, but he was like, if you were in the NFL right now, I would have cut your ass.
And I could just imagine that is sprinkled with so many expletives.
Yeah. You saw I had to catch myself there because I was like, oh, sorry.
He probably called you everything but a child of God.
Everything but. And so I was like, oh, wow. But that Senior Bowl is another way that they evaluate you.
Okay.
You go to that. That's a really big one. You get invited to the Senior Bowl. That's one you really want to attend because you have the best of the best there. And everybody is just a week-long practice with NFL coaches and GMs, and everybody gets to see how you are, how you work under pressure, you know, are you going to hustle? And so that was my first real introduction to, you got to bust your ass all the time.
Right.
Like, they're always watching. There's cameras everywhere to see everything you're doing. So when I left there, I thought I had a pretty good camp, and which I did, you know, being – top 10 in the second round is just really
it's
good.
It's real good.
It's really good. Yeah.
I don't know what those picks afterwards mean, but I know first and second round are good rounds, right?
Yeah.
Would you say that someone could get to the combine and completely upend all the work they've made prior to that? Because you know you have these guys that get scouted out in high school. They're seen as this way. And then they're scouted out in college. They're seen this way. Could a player get to the combine and completely change the perspective they have going into it, good or bad?
Yes, yes, absolutely you can.
Off of one combine.
And that's why I was hesitant to say that, because I just feel like if I've put together this body of work for 4 years and you've already got me graded at a top 10 pick.
It seems a little like hurtful.
Yeah, it's like, God, I had one bad week or I had one bad practice.
Or maybe I just don't have like my head on my shoulders today. Can you give me another? There's no other chance. This is it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard for me to say, because the NFL combine now, I haven't participated in it. It's it has changed a lot. I don't think as much emphasis is put on physically what you do, unless you just go out there and just completely crap the bed. I mean, you're dropping every pass.
Right.
You run, you know, they're thinking you're a defensive end. They're expecting you to run a 4.5, a 4.6, and you go out there and you run a 4.9. Like, you know, 225. For most defensive linemen, they'd like to see you in that 25 to 32 mark as far as reps. You go in there and you only do like 13. You know, they're going to be like, man, you know, is this kid? And then they interview you and you're kind of, yeah, you know, and you're lying about things. So it can affect you to good or bad.
Good or
but
bad.
I just feel like sometimes they can put too much emphasis on that. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, man, you know, my whole entire career, body of work for 4 years has now been cut down to just this small
this
moment in time. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think about just like these guys getting to the combine under the new public scrutiny that they have. You talking about in the 1999,
where
you didn't have cameras everywhere. No. It's a completely different perspective coming into it. It's not just physical and psychological. It's like, what is the public going to see from me?
Yeah.
And that could be as frivolous and serious as that may be. Seriously, it's like, you know, what are they going to see my face looking like on camera? But also, is it like a fashion show for some of these guys? Are these guys showing up like, I got to wear this? Like, how much has it changed? You know what I mean?
It has changed a lot. I mean, the game in itself has changed a lot. Just from when I played, things that would have gotten you 15-yard penalties are acceptable now. You know, the showmanship, I'll call it, has really increased from when I played football to now. Like, things that I look at and I watch guys play and I'm like, well, damn, you know, that's a little excessive.
Yeah.
And all the dances, it's like now it's encouraged to do these dances and to stand in front of the camera and do the big group picture.
I'm just thinking of that, like, because the NFL is definitely leaned into the more of the entertainment aspect.
Oh,
they
absolutely
want that back.
They're an entertainment league now.
So it's like, well, how much of that entertainment has reached its ways all the way down to the combine even?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a top pick, you're going to have, you know, designer cleats. You're going to have special gloves that nobody else has.
Labels and logos.
Yeah, you're going to have little logos on you. And you're going to have, like, let's just say you have gloves on, you're a wide receiver. So you sign with Nike or Adidas, whoever you sign with, they're going to give you a special pair of gloves. So guess what? Now these kids see those gloves of one of their favorite players or their upcoming favorite player, and they're like, I got to get those. Where do you get those? And now you're going online. So it has become entertainment and marketing. And, you know, it's a change. It's a changing of the guards.
How do you think that affects, like, players now when every facet of the game is so marketing-oriented? Whereas, like, when you played, you're going into the combine, your focus is on the draft, physicality, displaying what you need to do.
Right.
But today's players, they're also thinking of, what brands do I need to wear? What sponsorship can I acquire from this appearance?
Mm-hmm.
How does that change for these players now?
I think it's another level of pressure, you know, because now not only do I have to get out here and perform, but I have to perform at such a high level because I am being marketed, because I'm sponsored by this person or that person or this company. And or if I'm not sponsored by these people, I want to be sponsored by these people. So I have to go out here and excel to a level to where they're like, oh, look, check out Russell over there, you know. And so you go from a second round pick and you jump up to the first round. So now you've increased, you know, $5 or $6 million.
Right.
You know, which is huge.
It's not even just the team. It's like my bag has gotten so much bigger.
My bag got a lot bigger by going out here, and they thought, okay, well, Russell could be a, you know, a top pick in the second round, and I go out there and I kill it. I crush my drills. You know, I run a 4.440 as a defensive lineman, which, you know, it's not too far-fetched nowadays with these guys. But for me, being as big as I am, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be, like, unheard of. Go in there, you knock out 40 reps on the bench. Everything I do is just top-notch. Like, you know what? Russell, we could sneak you into that first round. So now you're talking about the difference between a $1 million signing bonus at my time to maybe $2 million, $2.5 million. So, you know, a lot can change with a good performance.
That's insane to think, like, you could run a 4.40, do really well, and all of a sudden you're the face of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely. That's how quick it happens. That is exactly how quick it happens. Like, one of the stories, and I'm sure you can just look this up, they said Deion showed up. You know, of course, Deion is who
Deion
he is.
Deion is Deion.
Yeah, he shows up in a limousine.
We're talking about Deion Sanders or anybody who doesn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, Coach Prime. They said he showed up, ran a 40, and then got back in the car. And
Prime left. Time, man.
And another one that I love is that they were talking to him in the meetings with the GMs, and I think I don't want to name the team because I'm not sure, right. But they were basically talking to him, and they were like, hey, you know, we have this pick, and we want to talk to you. And he's like, hold on, what pick do you have? And he was like, 8. He goes, don't worry about it. I won't be there. And I'm like, wow, the cojones to be able to say that, to be like, you got what pick? 8.
He was celebrity football player to me.
Yeah.
To me, he might have been for everyone, but Deion Sanders was like the first, like, this is one of the most obnoxious people I've ever seen, and I love every second of it.
I love every second of it, yeah. So I just, you have those kind of players that'll show up, and like now you'll have guys that for whatever reason, they'll go in and they're, you know, I'm not going to throw if I'm a quarterback. If I'm a top pick, I don't really have a lot to prove. You've seen what I can do. And so I'm not going to do anything that's going to hurt me.
The risk is too high to
even perform. The risk is too high, right.
I didn't even know you could opt out of the combine.
You can opt. Yeah, you don't have to go at all, which, to be honest with you, you know, I can use my son as an example. If he were a top 5 pick, I mean, he's obviously got an agent. I'm not going to step on any toes there. But if you coming out of college or, you know, Deuce is going to be a top 5 pick, dude, there's no reason for you
there's
to go
There's no
out
reason
there.
To go to the combine.
All you can do is hurt yourself.
Now, so let's explore that for a second. If you decide to not go to the combine, is that something that could hit you harder? Because the upside is that you're not going to risk throwing some bad passes and you've already proven your worth.
Yeah.
Is there a downside to not participating at all? Will people go, hey, I don't like that you didn't participate. Now your stock is lowered for me.
They'll try to say that, but if you're a top 5 pick, you're a top 5 pick.
Right.
And you've probably gone to the and even you would, I dare say you don't even need to go to the Senior Bowl, because if you've established yourself over your career in college that I am a high draft pick, going to these different events can only hurt you.
Really?
Because if you go there and you have a bad outing, or you go and you don't throw the ball well, or you don't do well in your drills, or you don't score well, all that can do is hurt you. So if I'm a top 5 pick, or like I was saying with my son, I'd be like, hey, man, there, you know, go interview, you know, meet face to face, let them talk to you, see what kind of person you are. But physically, they've already seen what they need to see.
So depending on how you performed in college, the combine is optional, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you're saying top 5 picks are usually the safe house where people are like, I don't need to go to combine.
Yeah.
I don't even need to do the Senior Bowl. Is that true for 5 through 10, 10 through 15? How many kids are deciding that I don't need to participate in these events because they're actually higher risk than reward?
This is more of a personal assessment now. And clearly I'm not an agent or anything like that. But I would say if you're a top 10 type of pick, you're probably not going to do any of that stuff. You may do a few things. If there are question marks coming into the combine about your speed, you probably want to go out there and your agent's going to let you know, hey, we need to work on your 40. I'm going to get a guy that's a specialist with the 40-yard dash, starts, how you run it. So you want to go out there and you want to improve your 40. So that shows, okay, he put in the work to get better.
Yeah.
If your hands are questionable, you want to go and you want to do drills and show that you can catch. If there's any marks, any red flags in your portfolio, you want to go and you want to try to clear those up. But if you're – you know, hands are great, speed's great, runs great routes, throws a great ball, whatever you're being evaluated for. I think if you've got all those marks checked, what's the point?
But then, you know, we just also talked about, you know, how different the motivations can be now with so much spotlight, so much sponsorship on the lines. Do you think, in your personal opinion, do you think some people are entering the combine for like a commercial for them? Is the combine more a commercial for them than a proving grounds?
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be.
I mean, it's got to be, right?
Yeah, you go out there and you run a great 40 and you got on, you're sponsored by this person's cleats.
Yeah.
And you go out there and you run this amazing 40. Well, now that marketing person is like, oh, Deuce Davis just ran a 4.5 at 6'6", 250 pounds.
And he's decked out in New Balance.
And he's decked out in New Balance or Adidas. I see you repping New Balance, yeah. And, you know, you can, so you can gain, you know, more marketing by being there. So,
okay.
But overall, like I said, the top 10 picks, those are pretty secure picks. And, but there's always the horror stories. I want to say Green Bay Packers. I'm going to draw a blank. Aaron Rodgers, he was one of those guys. He was supposed to go higher in the first round than what he did. And each round that went, or excuse me, each pick that went by, he's sitting at his table and he's got his family there. And you're kind of like, okay, with the 10th pick, 12th pick, 15th pick. And then you get to a point to where I think he was even removed because it was just getting so uncomfortable. You know, because those nowadays is such a spectacle, like you were talking about. You have the designer suits, you got all the jewelry, you got your whole family that's sitting at this table, and you have everybody who's close to you. And so if you're supposed to be projected as a top 10 pick and you slip to 17 or 18, I mean, you're sitting there, you've seen them, guys, mom has their arm around them, and they're talking, and they're trying to be stoic, but it hurts because you're like, and the NFL doesn't care.
Is that just an ego thing, or is it like, is it a real impact on them professionally?
Oh,
is that going to bring, that's going to bring down the salary?
Brings down your money. It brings down, I think it is an ego hit because you're told you're going to be number one and you end up going eight.
Okay.
Okay. You know, like, because you're walking around and then some of these guys are thinking, like, damn, I just spent all this money thinking I'm gonna be a first round pick, because you get these, you know, your agent will give you loans at, you know, whatever, 3%, 5%, whatever it is. You know, you have to pay it back when you get your money.
Yeah.
So you've gotten your first round pick, or excuse me, number one pick, and you're thinking, okay, this is the X amount of dollars. So I've done this for mom, I've done that for my sister, I paid off her student loans, and you go from first to 10. That's a big difference in pay. Now, not that you can't still take care of everything, but now you're kind of like, damn, I jumped the gun a little bit. And so you, these things are going through your mind. Now, well, now you're wondering, well, why did I fall so far? What happened? What did I did? What didn't I do? What should I have done better? Now all these questions are in your head. And I mean, you get picked and you're still very excited to have gotten picked, but it's just like, man, I should have been first pick.
Yeah.
And I slipped to five or six or whatever it may
That's
be.
That's got to be the worst feeling ever. Like, you, this should be the happiest day of your life.
Yeah.
You know, you think about these kids, how much work they put in to even get here, all the pressure and all the obstacles they avoided just to get here, to be drafted.
Yeah.
And that drop down from first or second to 10th or even worse, 30th.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's a story that ever happens. Now, the best day of your life has now turned into somewhat of a bad day.
Yeah. I mean, and that sounds so like sad, because you're like, dude, you still got drafted. You still, but it's just like anything else. If you go into your job and you were expecting to make this, and for whatever reason, they're like, well, you know I told you this is what we were thinking, but we brought in these two people. We did, we made these moves, so now we're going to pay you this.
Yeah, you don't want to hear somebody come up and say, at least you still got a job.
Yeah, at least you still got a job.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah,
I know
exactly.
I was supposed to make this much money.
Yeah, now I'm not making that money. So it can be, it can hurt a lot.
Right.
And, but for me, I knew I wasn't going to be a first-round pick, so there wasn't that pressure. There wasn't that, like, okay, I got to be a first-round pick. Oh, my God. I knew I was going to be a second-round pick. You know, I knew I was going to be middle to upper end of the second round. So that was less pressure. And at that point, it was just the waiting game of where am I going to go? What pick am I going to be?
Now, for you and your position, and I know for, like, an Aaron Rodgers, the expectation to go first and then dropping down to wherever he dropped down in that draft class, that's big in itself. Yeah. Is it even worse if someone of your position goes up higher than you? Like, say, for instance, for you, you were expecting a certain position. Mm-hmm. Were you expecting to be the first in your position to get drafted, though?
Well, no, not me. Because, like I said, I just named, you know, Booger McFarland.
And they played your position too.
Yeah. Okay. Booger McFarland was, matter of fact, we were at the Senior Bowl together, and while we were there, it was pretty clear that Tampa Bay wanted him. Those were the coaches.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, you know, just everything he did, they loved it.
Some people, you know where they're going before they
get there.
You
know where they're going. Yeah. Right, right. But for me, it was just, I knew that there were certain guys that were better than me. And that's not saying because, you know, the NFL said that. It's because look at their body of work. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you think you're good, but let's be realistic. So that's why, like I was, you know, joking earlier about Demetrius, it was just like, well, he was hurting. You know, I started looking at things. I'm like, this is, you know.
So the greatest day of your life actually kind of became a bad day in a sense.
Just because it was that one little, that one little pebble in my shoe was like, how did he do? How did he pull that off? And, but you know what? I got drafted and went on to have a great career.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's just kind of one of those things that I know a lot of guys go through. You know, you're sitting there and you're kind of like, well, this guy just went above me. I'm better than him.
It starts to see the intrusive thoughts start to think in, the questioning, the self-doubt.
Yeah. And like, why did he go over me? I look at what I did in school. And the thing is, you don't know what those coaches saw. You don't know why they took a chance because, I mean, let's go back to when Peyton Manning and not Drew Brees. He was at San Diego, and I'm going to draw a blank on his name.
Phillip Rivers. You talking about Rivers?
He got in a lot of trouble, DUIs. And I remember they went 1-2. And, oh, man, I want to say it may have been Rivers.
Was it Rivers? He's got a lot of kids.
No, that's like not him. No, that's the family man. Okay. Oh, my God.
Oh, I think you're talking about that running back.
No. He was a quarterback. It was two quarterbacks, and I hate that I'm bringing it up now. I can't think of his name.
We need to just put, like, a text here at the bottom.
Yeah, we need to put that
this
there.
This is the
like,
quarterback we're talking about.
This is who we're talking about. But it was a kind of a toss-up between Peyton Manning and then another young man that went to the Chargers, and he just got in a lot of trouble, never really panned out, got into a lot of problems with alcohol. So it's just like, why do you choose one guy over another? What was it that they saw in Peyton Manning that they didn't see in him? And so those are the kind of things that go into your mind sometimes when you're like, well, what is it that they saw in this particular person that they didn't see in me? Why is he that much better? Especially when you as a player, you can evaluate other players. And you know that
you
guy's a stud.
Like, if you're in the industry, you know what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. You know who's funny. You know who's not. You're like,
you know, who's a better actor, who's a better rapper.
Yeah.
Man, you may not say it out loud. Like, you may not come out and be like, oh, these guys are better than me. But you're like, yeah, they got me a little bit.
Yeah, they got me. Like, this guy, look at his sacks. Look at his production. Mm-hmm. So you recognize talent and you understand. But when it starts to get to that realm where, well, I fit right in here with these guys, and why is this guy, is it just because he's 6'6 and I'm 6'4? Or is it because I have a 6'6 wingspan and he has a 6'8 wingspan? So sometimes it comes down to little nuances like that, why a guy gets picked over you. It may not even be production. They may be looking down the road like, we feel like we can get more out of 6'6 with a 7-foot wingspan than we can out of 6'4 with a 6'6 wingspan.
That's such a complicated
It is.
High IQ take for a set member. Like, those small numbers is so different for us as a team that we're going to go this direction.
Yeah.
That's
sometimes
crazy.
That can be the deciding factor, or your interview, like, you know what, this guy just seems like a good person, and, you know, we're not worried about him getting his money and going crazy.
How do you even gauge that part, though, you know? You're like, I like his attitude. I like his energy. I like what he's going to bring to the team. And it just, like, being cool with the rest of the team since, because you don't want those players to come in and be disruptive.
They interview your coaches from college. Like, one of the best stories that I could probably tell you, and it's a dear friend of mine from college, Greg Ellis. He played with me when I was at Chapel Hill. And one of the stories that, I don't know how true it is, but because I love him so much, I lean into that. Yeah, this story is true. one of the things that we kind of heard when we were in school was that when Greg was coming out, the Dallas Cowboys took him at 5th. And before they took him that high, they talked to Coach Mack Brown at the time. And the rumor is that he told the Cowboys, like, this is a great man. He goes, if I was to pass away, you know, I would have no problem with him raising my family.
What?
And you're like, well, okay, well, we'll take him. So your coach can make or break you. Like, the relationships that you developed or made while you were in college with your coaches, is he hardworking? Is he on time? Is he dedicated? Is he a problem? You know, these are all the things you had 4 or 5 years to show, and, you know, you are who you are. I mean, you can't change your stripes.
Yeah.
If you're always missing meetings, if you're partying too much, these things aren't going to change because now you get money, you just become a bigger whatever you already are.
And you also have shown that that's what you're going to do, mm-hmm. especially having an understanding that college is basically the internship to the NFL.
Pretty much, yeah.
So that's exactly what are you doing during the internship?
Right. All right, this is who you are. And when you get that money, now you're like, oh, well, I got money to go with it?
Right.
So I already had a bad attitude to begin with. Now
you were broke with a bad attitude.
Yeah, you were broke with a bad attitude. So imagine how I'm going to be when I get this money.
A little money in your pocket.
You're going to go crazy.
Yeah, for real.
Absolutely. So it's just the combine is just so much that goes into it, and it's just so many facets to it that people don't understand. And when these guys are out here, like we were talking about, this is an opportunity to try to move up in your draft stock.
Yeah.
You want to try to move up. Everything you do there, you know, I've seen receivers talking to quarterbacks and quarterbacks talking to receivers like, hey, I'm going to throw you some good balls, man. I need you to catch these.
Because
you're throwing as I'm a quarterback, you're a receiver from my rival school or you're a receiver from wherever. Hey, man, what's your favorite route to run? What do you like to run? Because I want to make you look good, and I want you to make me look good. So it's all this jockeying, and hey, let's work together on this.
You also, like, through this entire conversation, I completely forgot that this is a team sport. You know, at the combine, it's so selfish.
It's very selfish.
It's very selfish, but at the core of this is a team sport. I can't really do this without you guys.
Yeah.
So if you guys don't look good, I don't look good. And especially talking about a quarterback wide receiver relationship.
Yeah.
I imagine like some dudes that are not cool with other quarterbacks don't do that well because they just have some sort of beef. Or do they like squash that? And like,
I think
hey,
when it comes to that kind of money, I think we can put aside whatever's going on, right? You know, we're talking about $30 million, $40 million. Man, I don't care that.
Who cares how you used to date your girlfriend?
Right. You know, that's in the past, brother. Let's move on.
And
I think that is because you get out there as a quarterback. If you did, like you made the joke about dating my girlfriend, I may not like you when I drop back, but when I drop back, I know this dude is pretty good, so let me get him the ball. I'm going to, you know, make some good catches. Yeah. You look good, I look good, so we all win. But don't think that I've forgiven you, though. we can put that aside for now because we got a job to do, but understand, if I get a chance, I'm going to put these hands on you. So don't think it's gone that far.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, that's just at the combine. It's kind of what guys are going through. That's kind of an inside look at or mentally what they're going through, physically what they're dealing with there. And, you know, it's like I use the example of a job fair because that's what it is. I mean, you're going from team to team and you're trying to sell yourself and you're trying to prove to them that I deserve to be where I'm at or even higher. That, you know, whatever may have happened in the past, I'm better than that now. I'm a hard worker. So you're just really trying to sell yourself to the teams that are there, that are interviewing you, that want to possibly give you a job and give you money that can change your life, your family's life, and just the trajectory of your entire family. So, you know, going to the combine is big, but when you're one of those guys who are a top pick, it's not as important for, you know, the hardworking blue-collar guys like myself.
Yeah. And so just seeing how far the combine has come from 1999 to 2024, do you see it getting even more popular? Do you see it becoming as popular as, say, like spring training here in Arizona where people come out and watch it and it's become this giant event and becomes even more commercial? The NFL is just getting more and more commercial every day.
Absolutely. I mean, you think it'll get even bigger? You see it every year. It's just more people. Yeah. Like, how can we make more money? How can we get people to love the NFL even more? So I don't ever see it slowing down. I think as long as the game is around and as long as people continue to love football, it's going to continue to trend into that marketing entertainment environment where it's big business and big dollars. And I don't see it slowing down at all. No, not at all.
Thanks for tuning in to The Route. Don't forget to subscribe and connect with us on socials for exclusive updates. We'll see you next week.